It's Axon, episode 14, The Best Keywords. What's up, Dice fans? You have once again stepped into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we are bringing you topics that we choose to put forward so that we can share our strengths for one another's improvement, bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn to address them, and overall increase our enjoyment of the game through competitive play. I am Dave, and joining me on the line this week, once again, back from a brief hiatus, is semi-professional spider-punk cosplayer, Randy. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks. I am back. It started off, you know, having some computer problems. I had to take a week or two off for that, and then the schedules just didn't line up, and here I am.
It's good to have you back here, sir. Spider-Punk, you have, in fact, cosplayed as Spider-Punk before, correct?
I have. Actually, not the full-blown Spider-Punk, because the only Spider-Man costume that I have is the black symbiote Spider-Man.
A good choice.
So I did dress up as a modified symbiote Spider-Punk, and it was a lot of fun.
That's pretty cool. Now, do I understand also correctly that you used an inside-out sequined vest because you couldn't find a better vest?
It wasn't even inside-out. I just covered all the sequins up with, like, patches and duct tape and stuff to make it look punker.
That works.
Yeah. Yeah, it worked.
That's pretty cool. I don't know why I didn't put two and two together, but yeah, that's totally the symbiote costume you were wearing. And I, being not a huge Marvel fan, but a huge fan of anything involving Venom and Carnage, except for Spider-Man 3, that's awesome. That's the only one that you could get, right? Like, symbiote just rocks.
Yeah, I might get a regular Spider-Man costume to do a regular Spider-Punk costume at some point, but about 2 years ago when I was deciding to get a Spider-Man cosplay suit, I had to go with the symbiote.
Right on. Very cool. Couple things before we move into a six-pack and then a topic. First, I want to remind everyone, if you like this show, please give us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Reviews are going to help others find the show. We don't advertise at all. Everything's word of mouth. And, of course, we'd love to give you props for a review here. Speaking of which, we need to give a shout-out to That Bearded Dragon. Recently left us a very kind review. So thank you, Mr. Dragon. We really appreciate what you had to say. We don't usually read anything from the reviews on the show, but this one I wanted to point something out. He mentions, or perhaps she, I live in an area with very little support for the game, so I don't get to play very often outside of my small group of gaming friends. Our local store carries the product, but has no interest in having any events for Dice Masters. What I would say is that they do, but they don't know it yet. Now, I don't want to speak out of turn because it's possible you've barked up this tree a lot, but, I mean, a draft, a pot of eight for a draft moves more than an entire gravity feed just to give everybody, like, the stuff they need plus the prize support. It just moves so much product for a store that I don't think they 100% know what they are turning down with that. So I kind of wonder if you and your friends started to play at the store and showed them moving some product. And it's quite possible you've already tried this. And if you have, then, hey, you gave it the try, and that's cool. But I think if you showed them how much was there and appealed to their business sense, they might maybe come around. But if you already tried that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Randy, your store has been pretty gung-ho about the Dice Masters, right? Even one of the co-owners is playing like crazy.
Yeah. I think that's probably been the biggest part, is the day that the shop opened, me and JT, we both stopped in there and said, hey, you know, we're really into this game, Dice Masters, and if you guys can, you know, get some product and, you know, let us hold some events here. We will be able to move product for you. And that's how we pitched it to them initially. Just here, this is what a draft looks like. This is how much, you know, it costs. This is the, what the product looks like. And, you know, this is how much money that each person that comes to the draft would spend. Now I have also been to another shop, a local comic book shop that was selling, you know, Dice Masters and Magic the Gathering, other gaming stuff. But that store, they didn't have the room for people to play games at the shop. But they sold gaming stuff. They just didn't have room in the shop. And I know they entertained the idea of, like, kind of sponsoring, like, an event. But it would have to be, like, at a third-party location and, you know, where there'd be enough room. And then it would be, you know, all on the players. Like, if you guys want to play somewhere else, then we will provide product for you to play. But you can't do it here in the shop because we don't have the room here in the shop. It was that kind of thing.
But well, I mean, that might be a way around it too.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, like, that's what I was getting at. That might be something that this shop that the Bearded Dragon mentioned would be interested in.
You know, there's a game store regionally that sells a lot of stuff. Not so much the hobby board games, but more into some of the miniatures games and the hobby stuff on that side. They're big on Warhammer and Flames of War and a few other things, and they have nowhere in the shop to play. It's just chock full of games and miniatures and things like that. But what they do is they like every weekend or every other weekend, they go to the local library that makes space for them to play. And the library loves it because it gets people in there that maybe wouldn't otherwise come. And the players love it because they have a place to play. And I understand it to be a pretty good relationship. And so there are options, and we hope you find one that works for you. And if you have any questions, please send us a message. We'll be happy to bounce some ideas off of us. We're going to move to our six pack, but before we do that, oh my gosh, I have to thank everyone for the outrageous support for our Patreon. The six pack will be a live and well, and Patreon giveaways of the foils, rares, and super rares that we pull in the six pack will begin in November, and as we said, that person will be drawn monthly. We were really completely blown away, seriously, that we hit the keep six pack cost neutral for us goal so quickly, and we really can't thank you enough.
Well, Dave, the podcast that announced the Patreon went live at like what, 8 in the morning?
I usually drop it at midnight so that people wake up with it. If they subscribe, they wake up with it already downloaded.
Okay.
For their commute.
Okay. But before noon on that Tuesday, we had reached our goal.
Yeah. Yeah, it was absurd.
That's insane.
We're kicking around some other ideas since the response was so great. Like maybe we'll do a bonus episode here and there with extra six pack stuff to give away or something like that. Nothing is set yet, so I'm not promising anything. But clearly you guys love the six pack and that just blows us away. So as long as we can keep doing it that way, we will keep doing it that way. We're not going to plug this now at all, as I promised, since we did hit our funding goal. But if you are curious, patreon.com/theattackzone. You can see what we have going on there. And if you have any questions, just send us an email or check us out on the site. All right. Randy, got a six-pack, Blast from the Past, an oldie but a goodie. One of my favorite sets to open up because of how colorful everything is, War of Light.
War of Light. That's pushing a year old now, isn't it?
I know. We are right around a year of War of Light, so as a not quite exact one-year anniversary, I thought it would be great to do a six-pack, take a break from GAF. We certainly have plenty of time to do more of that, and then Deadpool's on the horizon. Let's look at some War of Light. Still a very, I think, Randy, very fun set to draft because of all of the tribalism in there with the crazy affiliations all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Plus Teen Titans. Who doesn't love them?
I don't know.
I don't either. If I meet them, I'll punch them. Not really. All right, so let's get to it. Six pack. We're going to start commons, uncommons, and then rare. Starting off with our common Warth, a three-fist Blue Lantern. Peace be with you. He cannot attack or block unless Saint Walker is active.
Pass.
I was never a huge fan. Yeah, pass.
Pass.
So I'll say what I like about him first, and I guess Saint Walker as well. Level 3 is pretty good for him. He's not expensive. Saint Walker also, like, level 3, really good. Not expensive to buy or to field. I don't think, other than, like, Saint Walker's defense and maybe Warth's level 3 stats, I don't think the limitations that each of those cards have do a very good job of... they're not made up for in other arenas like stats.
I will say that the common Lantern Ring really opens the doors for that two-cost Saint Walker, because the common Lantern Ring has the Green Lantern affiliation, despite that the fact that it's a continuous action die.
That's true, and he gets the buff there.
And giving him the buff there, I think...
Oh, wait, no, it wouldn't. I'm sorry. No, that's only Green and Yellow Lanterns.
I'm pretty sure it's Green and Blue. And then the uncommon is Yellow and Red.
You know what? You are correct, sir. It is Green and Blue. It's hard to read those lanterns when they're so small, right?
Yeah.
But it's still a pass. It's still a pass. Oh, I just wanted to give Mr. Warth a little bit of time. Next up, common Mira, Queen of Atlantis, the Red Lantern here. If there are three or more different lantern colors in play, reduce all damage done to Mira by 2. Global pay mask if a character would deal you 5 or more combat damage, it instead deals you 2 combat damage.
I'd think about it. Probably pass, though. If I was able to take a team that I knew I was going to be dealing a lot of direct damage, she'd be a good one to add on.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely not as a first pick.
And there are some opportunities for direct damage in here, such as uncommon fatality, though it's hard to guarantee an uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few different ways to do it, but not a ton. Not as many as in, say, like DC Justice League. So I like the global if I'm worried about combat damage or other kinds of shenanigans, but not a first pick.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of direct damage, next up is Starfire, the 4-bolt Teen Titan, Princess of Tamaran. When fielded, deal 1 damage to target opponent for each of your active Teen Titans.
I love the Titans in this set because while the other Lanterns have so much, you know, that can work with them and against them, there is no Teen Titan hate in this set. Mm-hmm. And so drafting a team of the Titans is, you know, really strong. I mean, I think she's leading so far. She's better than anything else we've seen. It'd be hard to take her as the first Titan since she relies on needing so many others. It would definitely... The more Titan dice I see in the middle of the table could influence me to pick her a little sooner.
100%. I was just going to say, this is absolutely about reading the rainbow. The other thing you might need to worry about is if you see a lot of Starfire dice out there, that's not necessarily a sign to avoid her or avoid the Titans, but it's also possible that other people will see that and Titans will be few and far between. It's kind of a crapshoot. The other thing that's not 100% great about the Teen Titans is that, like, she's what really makes them work, and her fielding cost is not so great. 1-2-2. The rest of them are fairly cheap, though. Wonder Girl is 1-1-2. All right. But they all do work together, and you're absolutely right. There is just no hate for them in this set. So right now, she would be my leader in the clubhouse for sure. Next up, Batman, Fear as a Weapon, the 6-cost Yellow Lantern, 6 mask, that is. If you roll a 2 generic energy face during your roll and reroll step, Batman gets +2/+2 for each. Global, use 1 generic energy. The first time you play a basic action this turn, draw 1 die and add it to your prep area.
I just can't take a 6-cost.
It's not a first pick.
I just can't take a 6-cost with my first overall pick.
No, it's not a first pick. I think this is something where mid-late draft and you think you're like mid-late draft pack two and you think, I'm not sure, I might have to rely on some action dice to get my team off the ground because I'm not picking what I love here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is a way that you go, but there's no reason to pick this first.
Yep.
Next up, Fatality. You're a Sinril. You're, I don't know, whatever it is. 3-bolt Star Sapphire, also a villain. When fielded, deal 1 damage to target character for each different color lantern in play. Not just yours, but also your opponent's.
I like her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she's better than Starfire. I think she'd have to be at this point, since we haven't seen any other Titans so far.
Oh gosh, the removal was just so good, right?
Yeah.
You know there's going to be lots of different lanterns happening, and frankly,
yep.
it can be difficult to draw into a lot of the same lantern core, and even then, there's not always a great reason to do so. So diversity is your friend, and she helps it, plus whatever your opponent's doing. If you get more than one of her, especially, very similar card in Green Arrow Flash is the common Firestorm that does damage for the different energy, the different character dice in play.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, I had 3 of those. It was fantastic. I could remove like anything when attacking. Now she is, of course, when fielded, but even so. Removal like this is not too bad and can really work well for you in a draft. I think I like her better than Starfire at this point, but I will. It's kind of a 1A, 1B for me.
Yeah. Yep, I'm right there with
so
you.
We're going to sit them aside. Kilowog, Drill Instructor, a 5-fish Green Lantern. Kilowog gets 1 attack for each opposing mask character die in the field zone.
Man, for such a fun character in the comics and the cartoon, he's just hard to find a way to use him in Dice Masters.
Man, what do they keep doing to my favorite characters? I love Kilowog, Big Poozer, and Booster Gold, and I can't even.
Hey, we're waiting on a good Juggernaut.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. I hear you, man. I hear you. Our last common is Wonder Woman, Loved by the Gods, a 4-shield Star Sapphire. While Wonder Woman is active, if you roll 3 or more shields, excluding question marks, your sidekicks are unblockable this turn. Ooh.
I think there's just too much you need to go right with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you have access to Professor X in this draft to be able to be just rolling oodles of dice to get those 3 shields.
That is exactly the case. Though let me point out something that you do have access to.
What is that?
Parallax.
You do have access to Parallax.
I will also point out that cheap shields include Lex Luthor, 2-cost, Monk, 2-cost, Wonder Girl, Robin. Oh, wait, sorry, that's a promo card. My bad. Another Lex Luthor. Oh, wait, those... Jeez. Huh. Filter by not the starter set, Dave, and you will perhaps be more correct in the things that you say. Nonetheless, there are several cheap shields in this set, such as Monk, such as Wonder Girl.
Okay.
Now, you do go up, and those are both at common. You do then go up to 4 cost. There are actually no shields at 3 cost. So, but I hear you. I'm just playing devil's advocate
right
now.
I think as of now, I'm still leaning towards Fatality, slightly edging out Starfire.
Well, right. So, like, how would you make Wonder Woman work if you could? I would probably want to do something like, well, one, I would need to have some cheap shields. I would want to have Parallax. I would probably need to have Resurrection or Villainous Pact as a global available to me. And I also would want to have the front line to make it a win condition.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
That would probably work. But I need her to do this. I need to get 3 shields and the front line on an energy face on a turn. Now, don't get me wrong. You could draft into that, and it could work. I don't know, but it probably could work.
Yeah, I mean, because
it's just, I don't know yet.
Because then you only really need, I mean, two purchases and some sidekicks in the field.
Mm-hmm.
She
might be fun to mess around with for a popper team. I don't know how effective it would be, but it'd be fun to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But not a pick in this draft, I don't think. This is another one where maybe, like, in my first pack, if I did certain things, I would look at her in the second, but not here.
Yeah, or if I try to draft one way, like, you know, if I try to draft Titans and then, you know, I get no Titans passed me and I end up having to abort, you know, the plan, maybe I'll pick her thinking, here's a fallback strategy because I've got nothing.
Yeah, like I got Starfire, I got maybe Wonder Girl, but I don't have anything else. Okay, well, let's try Wonder Woman and see what happens. Yeah, fair. All right, moving into the uncommons, we still have Starfire and Fatality kind of neck and neck here. Starfire offering the direct damage when fielded, and Fatality offering the removal when fielded. So let's look at Warth, Brother, the three-fist blue lantern uncommon. At the end of each turn, if you have no other active lantern dice, knock out Warth and draw an extra die to your prep area.
I've seen this guy used to great effect on a constructed team where there are no other lanterns in play, but there's just too many other lanterns here to make him make his ability worthwhile.
Yeah, I'm actually curious about that constructed team, because even so, you're definitely paying one to field him. So I guess you could pay off in a great turn and you do get to draw that extra die. I don't know that I would field a character just for that, but that's an interesting way to look at ramp without having to rely on a global ability.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that now. I hadn't considered that aspect of him.
I forget what else was
still on. Not a first pick.
Yeah, I forget what else was on that team. But it was pretty interesting. It was whenever had a character that had an ability, whenever one of your characters is knocked out, do something. And so they were able to knock Warth out at the end of every turn and keep up some ramp, and it was pretty slick.
That's pretty cool. I'm going to have to look some stuff up afterwards. I'm sitting him aside, too, just to remind me to look up some things. Monk, Compassionate Protector, a 3-shield member of the Indigo Tribe. This character takes no damage during the attack step if Indigo 1 is active. You know, there's a cycle almost in here of fairly cheap characters that field for 1 on all faces have stats. And rely completely on another one for their ability to work.
Yeah.
Monk is one of those.
Yeah, I've seen some people have success in the draft using Monk and Indigo 1, but usually if you have one and you know that the other is somewhere in the draft, you take the one you have and you just sit and hope that the other gets passed to you. So,
Well, I would probably want the common that gets the buff.
Right.
More than I would want to avoid attack damage. The common gets +2/+2 if Indigo 1 is active. Now, Indigo 1 uncommon, I'm not familiar with his, but I know the common also does get a buff if Monk is active, conversely. So they kind of work off of one another. Uncommon just can't be damaged by, it looks like, Yellow Lantern characters. Mm. Yeah, that's not really anything I care about. I would be more interested in those two in common.
Yeah.
If I was interested at all.
Yeah.
Next up, a Teen Titan. The 4-mask Raven, Trigun's Heir. When another character is KO'd, you may KO Raven. If you do, return the other character die to play. And this does not count as fielding that die. So she offers masks and fields for fairly cheap, decent defensive stats here. What do we think of Raven?
Hmm. She doesn't help you win.
She doesn't. She's an okay defensive card.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that, unlike some of the Teen Titans and even some of her other abilities, she can work for everybody. But I don't think this is not a first pick. All right, one more uncommon before we move to the rare. It is the 5-fist Mongul Black Mercy. He's a villain and a Yellow Lantern. When Mongul attacks, spin down target opposing character die. Very offensively skewed. Fields for 1, 4, 2, 2, 5, 4, 3, 6, 5. And I've always felt that his die logo looked kind of like a futuristic basketball.
That is exactly what it looks like.
It's not as cool as like the upside down apocalypse being the cat wearing headphones.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty fun. So Mongul here. Not only do I not want to first pick him, I don't totally see the value in his ability as a card.
No, there's... I mean, it's nice to have, you know, opponents' characters at low levels, but I don't believe there's any Overcrush in this set.
I don't believe there's any Bursts in this set either.
Right. So...
So it's not like you're trying to manipulate somebody off of a burst.
Yeah, you're not trying to get them off of a burst. If there was Overcrush, I could see... Or no, there Supergirl. Is there is some Overcrush, yeah. So, okay, get something to, you know, a lower level so it has lower defense so more Overcrush damage can get through. But that's so situational.
Mm-hmm. Well, and are you going to have the 6-cost Supergirl and the 5-cost Monk? I mean, yeah, you might get them out, but at that point, is the best thing you can do to spin something else down?
Yeah.
Or conversely, you're going to take him defensively to force Supergirl to spin down so she can't hit you as hard. I don't know. I'm not going to game plan around one card.
No.
Although that Supergirl is not terrible for what she is. 8-7 on level 3. Jeez. All right. Let's finish up with our rare Atrocitus. 7-bolt Red Lantern villain Bloody Leader. When fielded, knock out up to 2 target shield characters. Or knock out all emotional constructs in play, yours and your opponent's. That's a 7-cost character.
I mean, I like him. I like the ability, but it is 7 cost. It's way too expensive to take with the first pick of the draft. Even if you draft this guy, there's no guarantee that he will, you know, you'll be able to purchase him in a given game.
No, and I don't think that we've detailed some of the shields in this set, and they're not bad. I don't think there's a ton in shield that I'm scared of and would want to knock out. Now, maybe some of my own things to roll something, or maybe
right.
I could choose the common Wonder... Was it common or uncommon Wonder Girl to redirect it somewhere else?
Exactly, common Wonder Girl.
That would be the combo, but... To do that with a 7-bolt character, I just don't know. A seven character has got to be like Gorilla Grodd in Green Arrow Flash, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be that dot, 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 and then I win.
Yep.
He doesn't do that, unfortunately. All right, so for your money, Randy, are you going with a Starfire Princess of Tamaran or Fatality? You're not going to be able to say the name all.
All right, we know that, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, really appealing cards in this you know, 6-pack we got, Starfire and Fatality.
I would say these are two pretty appealing cards.
Well, okay,
nothing
there's
is with them.
There's,
you know,
those
I mean?
Two, and then there's a big gap between third place. Raven,
yeah, I would say so.
Raven,
yeah.
Maybe that Monk, if someone is just hunting for Monk dice.
Maybe Mira, if you want the global. Yeah, there's not a lot out there that I would consider taking.
I think I'd
other than one of these two.
I think I would have to go with the Fatality. And then just try and poach cheap lanterns. Cheap, different colored lanterns that come through to me. And
I completely agree with you. Fatality is my answer as well. And there are a couple reasons why. The first is that, one, you have to field Starfire for her thing to work. And that's also a problem with her super rare, by the way. Even though it's one attacks, still, you need a lot of Teen Titans, and that's not a great ability. Like, super rares are gonna not really have an impact on a draft, and she's a little too reliant on Titans. So maybe that'll get better. Maybe that'll get better to really have an impact in Constructed. The second thing is that Fatality has a freaking amazing uncommon that does a lot of damage. And for her common, I want a lot of dice for the removal that she offers. But if I get the chance to take her uncommon, then I'm pretty happy. Uncommon Bounty Hunter, when fielded, she deals 3 damage to target player if you have 3 or more bolt symbols in your reserve pool. Now, that may be difficult, as we talked about with Wonder Woman, but it can be done. There are a lot of cool bolts in this set. So,
How expensive?
That's a lot of damage.
How expensive is that uncommon? 4 cost?
3.
3?
Just a 3.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not outside the possibility. I mean, you buy multiple of her, and she can provide the bolts you need for her ability.
And when you have a good character for removal like that, you get a few of those dice, and you just keep fielding, and you're going to get a turn where just there's not enough to be able to stand up to what you have with the removal that you've got. She probably can't be your only removal, but she's pretty good removal in a set that's going to see a lot of different color lanterns in play. So Fatality is my pick too.
Yep, Fatality it is.
Okay. All right. So moving on from the 6-pack. Today, we have a top 10 list for you. We wanted to do something a little different, something we haven't talked a ton about before, and do our top 10 keyword abilities in Dice Masters. There's going to be a discussion on at least one of them because we had it behind the scenes, and I won. Or at least, I don't know if I won. Randy capitulated and said, fine. And yeah, that's probably a fair assessment, right?
I was starting to put kids to bed, and Dave like typed up this whole big argument to why this one should be included, and I was like, yeah, sounds good.
So yeah, so I kind of feel that these are like keyword abilities are abilities that like an attribute that communicates a special game mechanism. They're always bolded, and that's just kind of how it is, or almost always, unless they miss them. We have some retroactive keyword abilities, like Thrown Car is most certainly Overcrush, even though it doesn't really say Overcrush. I mean, that's just kind of being reasonable there. But, most characters don't deal excess damage to their opponent, but this one does. Most characters can't be bought by knocking out others, but this one can. So when it's like something, most dice can do this, but or can't do this, but this one can because of this attribute, then that's kind of where we had it. Something like Burst wouldn't be a keyword. That's just a symbol that like accesses different abilities for that die that it wouldn't have in other forms. It doesn't let it do something special just by nature of having that word on its card.
Yeah, like when fielded is not keyword because that's just,
And I know that gets fuzzy because you could say, well, other characters can't do something when fielded, but this one can. But that's different because when fielded could trigger a keyword ability or other things like that.
Right.
So that's not the same thing.
Yep.
Before we get going, though, we need to give our dishonorable mention. And we'll do honorable mentions a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
Dishonorable mention, right, Randy? Like, there's one out there that's just so bad.
Are you talking about the worst of the worst keywords?
I am talking about, like, through the floor, the worst keyword. And I am talking about, of course, Heroic from Uncanny X-Men.
Say it's not so. Heroic.
Oh, I know. Everybody's favorite. Now, I'll give them credit. They were experimenting with different abilities at this point.
Yes.
And I think we saw, like, improved versions of it that were not called that ever before, but man, it was just, you had to have 2 different heroic characters, like one in the field, the other fielding, and then their abilities triggered, but they were all really expensive. None of the abilities synergized very well, and it just was kind of,
well, not only that, but they only lasted until your next turn, so it was such a small window for the heroic abilities to stay active.
Right. You had to have 2 specific characters who only got abilities if they were both interacting at the same time. And again, those abilities did not synergize in any way, shape, or form.
Now, I will say, my favorite thing about Heroic is whenever there's a new player to the game, I always hear him say at least one time, "You know what? I think I'm going to make Heroic work." "All right, buddy, you do that. You go make Heroic work. Let me know how that goes."
Oh my gosh.
But we've all thought at one point, like, "You know what? If I sit down and figure this out, I'll find a way to make it work." It's just,
yeah. No, I mean, nothing with those 13 characters works very well at all.
No.
There are only two that are cheap, and none of them do anything that great. Heroic just didn't work, and we saw kind of like revisions of it later on, and that's fine. So let's get into the list and have some fun talking about the good stuff. So, Randy, number 10.
All right, number 10, Team Watch. Team Watch abilities reward you for having characters that share an affiliation. When a character with Team Watch is active and you field another character with the same affiliation, you'll get a bonus.
Yep. So we were talking about Heroic fixed. I kind of feel that Team Watch is Heroic fixed.
Right.
And we've now seen this in several sets since it was first introduced back in... Was that Age of Ultron?
It was Age of Ultron.
Yeah, and it's been in multiple sets and recently had a resurgence with a couple of cards in the Green Arrow Flash set.
Yep. I know I ranked this one a little higher than Dave.
You ranked it a little higher than all of us in that none of the rest of us had it on our list. Though I don't hate it. It was just below for me.
Yeah. It's such a fun team building mechanic when I'm trying to put new teams together. One of my favorite ways to use Team Watch, I had a villains team, and I was using the rare Age of Ultron Spider-Woman. I believe the subtitle is Pheromones.
That's her.
Team Watch, when you field a character that shares an affiliation with her, you can KO her to knock out all opposing sidekicks and gain life for each sidekick knocked out. I think that's it.
Not just sidekicks, all opposing fielded characters with a fielding cost of 0.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Even better, right?
Yeah. And the way I was using her was on a villain's team, on a villain retaliation team. So before I fielded a villain, I would give her the villain affiliation. So then I field a villain character, and all of a sudden, they share affiliations, and I could use her ability, knock herself out, and I could trigger some retaliation damage with Black Manta. I mean, it was a pretty slick combo, but she did great there with that Team Watch. I know what's his name? Starhawk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Avenger and Guardians character. He's got a killer Team Watch ability that gives him and whatever character triggered his Team Watch, both +2/+2.
I think just +2, but yeah, it's just +2 attack, but still very good.
Oh yeah. But yeah, I think there are a lot of possibilities for this team or for this keyword. We've seen some of them. They've been good. Others, not so much, but
yeah,
Yeah,
you're going to have hits and misses, but I'm with you. I really like it. I will point out, just hold your emails or comments. Yes, we know that there is some dispute as to how villain retaliation works. I understand both sides of it and see the merits to both sides of it, and we're not going to comment on that here beyond to say that, yes, we get it. Just talk to your TO. good enough. All right, number 9. Is one that I picked, and this was the source of our argument. This is Continuous. Now, Continuous is a little unique because it affects action dice and not just characters. It's only on action dice. But I don't think that's a problem with it. Continuous is pretty nifty. It's on almost as many characters as many cards as Team Watch is, 17 cards to 20. And it's a bolded word. Now, it happens to also be in italics, but that's okay with me. It's a bolded word that says other action dice leave the field zone or don't stick around, but this one does. And I just think of some really great continuous cards that we've had out there And continue to get, you know, more recently we get Captain Cold's gun, which is just fantastic. It's cool removal even at the common if you're using it in draft. And boy, the uncommon and rare can really throw a wrench into some meta teams and cheap control teams. You have, of course, the Lantern Ring, which is pretty awesome. The Super Rare Lantern Battery, which some people have had some fun playing around with. Just some really cool things. The Millennium Puzzle and Rod cards were errata to include continuous. In fact, they may be the reason that the keyword exists.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have 19 of these because they are considered to have continuous at this point. I just think it's a really cool ability that has certainly had some impact on the game.
Yeah, I agree. I guess my source of not liking continuous, or not that I don't like it, but I think there are some things, one action in particular, that operates as if it should have continuous, but it's never been errated to have continuous, and so it just kind of causes a lot of kind of some interaction problems.
You're talking of Imprisoned?
I am talking about Imprisoned.
I think there's an argument to be made there, but I would say if that's why you don't like it, let me also point out, Randy, what's your favorite team to play in Unlimited right now?
It would be a Mask Ring.
Yeah, Ring being the king of continuous.
Well, yeah.
So, Randy, if you like it, put a ring on it. What's number 8?
Number 8 is Deadly. As the new keyword that we're seeing in the Deadpool set, character dice that are engaged with a character die that has Deadly are KO'd at the end of the turn, even if the character with Deadly has been KO'd or leaves the field zone.
Mm-hmm.
That last part, or leaves the field zone, is super, like, convenient for characters with Deadly. You know, I'm going to attack and force you to block, and now I'm just going to use the Distraction Global to bring my character with Deadly back, and your character's knocked out anyways, because it was engaged with mine.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen this yet in the wild, but, boy, I really like what it is, and I like what similar things have already done. The ability, even though it didn't exist, has had an impact on the game already, in a sense, with Deadpool Jack, the uncommon from Avengers vs. X-Men, being a part of the winning Worlds team in 2015, a very interesting form of removal. Attack, assign an opposing character to block him, and then just distract that Deadpool back. Mm-hmm. So something that your opponent has, it's sticking in the field, it's gone. Now, this one was even more targeted than Deadly will be, but the abilities had an impact on the game already, even before it existed, which is pretty darn cool. I'm really excited for it in Deadpool, especially to see all the blocker replacement cards that we have, blocker manipulation with Blink T or Distraction. Like you said, Randy, I think it's just pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
All right. Number 7 is Impulse. This is a new ability brought to us through the Green Arrow Flash set. Impulse abilities happen when you purchase a character die with the Impulse ability. The character does not need to already be active in order to use the Impulse ability. And I got to be honest, I don't believe that I like this one at all. You, Randy, I think this was your number 1.
Yes, I love Impulse. Oh, my goodness.
I don't hate it. I just...
Now, I will say...
I question the impact.
Okay, I will say that there are very few Impulse abilities that exist right now that I think that fully take advantage of what this can do. The super rare katana, I think, is the best Impulse ability.
That's fair.
If you use a question mark when you purchase her, you put her on field 1 or on level 1 in the field immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Another is, I think it's actually cross pulse, but it's close enough to Impulse. Jay Garrick, one of his versions is he gives everything fast until end of turn. Now, we don't really have a super useful, way to use fast right now other than, keep your stuff alive when you attack. But, they could put some monster impulse abilities on a character and just jack that purchase cost up. I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I would say there's an argument for fast overcrush.
Oh, yes.
If that gets working, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. We
can include cross pulse with this. I agree with you.
Yeah. But I mean, what if just brainstorm for a second. What if there was an impulse ability that granted overcrush to a couple characters? I mean, so you make it a 7 or 8 cost impulse ability. And all of a sudden, 2 or 3 of your characters can have overcrush until end of turn. I mean, that's huge. If there was a force beam or fireball type area of effect thing that damaged all characters in play as an impulse ability.
Like the super rare green arrow Star City Savior cross pulse. When you purchase this die, deal 2 damage to all opposing character dice.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. I like impulse better than cross pulse. There's just, less.
I agree with you, but they're cut from the same cloth.
Yeah. I think that there are some real possibilities to tie an impulse ability into your win condition on demand. And I think it's a matter of time before we... It's not a matter of time. I really hope that they continue to utilize the impulse ability so that we can see some of that stuff maybe come to fruition.
Well, you've swung me like 180 degrees on this, because as I think about some of these things, like the green arrow that you pointed out here that we looked at, what are some other ways to do that? Well, there's get the Hulk out and then have a bolt and magic missile the Hulk. So you bought the Hulk for 6 and you fielded him and you used the magic missile.
Yeah.
Or you have the King Shark with Team Watch. Okay, so you got the King Shark out and then you fielded an affiliated Suicide Squad character. Okay. That's another way. Or you could just buy this, also a 6 cost, and then it just does it. Now, you're only going to do it once. You can't do it multiple times the way you might be able to with, like, King Shark or Hulk. But sometimes that's all you need. So, yeah, you've swung me around on this. I like some of the things that are already in there, and I'm really certainly very curious to see where this goes. So that's our number 7, Impulse. Randy, how about our number 6?
Number 6 is
shuffling. Shuffle, 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 shuffle papers.
Experience.
Hey.
Yeah. +1/+1 counters on things are great.
Sure is.
The biggest downside to experience is, you only get it on your turn. Mm-hmm. It can only be once during your turn, and you have to KO a monster affiliated character with it. So even if you can knock out multiple monsters on your turn, you still only get, 1 experience token per character with experience.
Right.
All of that taken into account, though, the games I've played where experience is a factor have been an absolute blast. Because all of a sudden you have, a halfling thief or an elf wizard, that's a 5/5 character, and it makes things real interesting.
It sure does. I was a bit skeptical on this choice. This was my number 10. It was truly the last one on for me because of its like unlimited impact. But man, drafts playing Faerun Under Siege and Battle for Faerun are just so darn fun. Because of experience, or just constructed D&D universe constructed, so darn fun because of experience. You can't beat that. It's really interesting. It changes how you have to play things and play around things. It makes you think about your team makeup a little bit more. You have to look at some of these characters differently. And I like that dimension added to the game. And it's something that anybody who's going to play. So we talk about Dice Masters on this show from the competitive standpoint, but competitive doesn't just mean unlimited constructed or this draft. It means whatever you're going to play in a competitive environment. if your store is going to do a popper tournament, then there you go. We're actually doing that the last weekend of the month.
Hmm.
If your store is doing In-Universe Constructed, great, then there you go. And that's what you want to play. Like, it's not... We want to win games. It's fun to win. We don't, like, kill people if we don't win, but
speak for yourself there, Dave.
Well, that explains why you've been losing people from your scene. No, I'm just kidding. His scene is very healthy. I'm just a bad joke.
Yeah.
But yeah, experience killing monsters, pretty cool.
The only thing I want is an easier way to give something the monster affiliation.
Currently a way to do that?
There is.
I guess there's like that one action die.
Yep, the infiltrate, basic action.
Yeah.
You give it, you know, what, +2 or +3 defense and the affiliation of your choice. So you make it harder to kill, and then you can turn into a monster. But I don't know, what if there was a ranger that, you know, a global, pay 2 energy, target character gains the monster affiliation till end of turn. It would be thematic because it's a ranger. You know, it's a little more expensive than other globals that can just dish out affiliations. But it's a way of giving some of your stuff maybe that lasting +1/+1 bonus. I'd really like to see something like that in the future. Or even if it is still on action, just make it a cheaper action.
Well, you know, and I'll also point out that I think that some of the things you're talking about there are exactly why we have villain maker globals. We don't have monster maker globals.
Mm-hmm.
We have monsters, a lot of people want them to be considered villains, at least the evil monsters, or maybe just the evil characters. But I think the reason that that hasn't flown over completely is also because of experience. If monster equaled evil, if monster equaled villain, you might have some experience problems. It might leak into other sets in ways that they did not intend them to interact. Evil might be a better way to do that. But even then, given the multifaceted nature of good, neutral, and evil in the D&D verse, that wouldn't be thematic anyway. And I'm fine with it as it is.
Yeah.
So, all right. Number 5 is ally. Ally is a very simple definition. These are just characters that count as sidekicks while they're in the field zone, in addition to whatever other designations they may have. They're not sidekick dice in the bag or prep area or use power really anywhere else, even on the moon. But if they are in your field zone, then bam, they are sidekicks. And boy, with all of the stuff out there now, more so than ever, messing with sidekicks and what you can do and pumping sidekicks and having them count as different things. Oh, that's just too fun. And I don't think we have yet seen how high that ally can fly. You know, we're seeing the teams like the front line doing things with sidekicks. It's also inspiring some people to look at new versions of the old flying sidekicks team with the Uncommon Falcon from Uncanny X-Men. And so many other varieties of things that you're doing with sidekicks. And that's just really cool. And so I think that ally is very relevant and can continue to be so.
Yeah, the only reason it's this far down on our list is because I left it off of my list. Yeah, I mean, you guys have convinced me, you know, kind of since then that, okay, it's better. It should have had a place on my top 10. But I totally agree that it's largely untapped as of now. I mean, there are some people that were running a couple of maybe ally characters with Gabi to get him that extra damage that looks at sidekicks. One thing I mentioned to Dave when we were talking about this, there was a combo floating around with Alfred and the rare Dick Grayson, where the Dick Grayson gets mm-hmm. a bonus whenever a bad affiliated character is knocked out, and the Alfred has a chance to bring himself back from being knocked out. I saw people triggering that with the Norman Osborn Green Goblin global ability that's pay a bolt to KO a sidekick. KO one of your own sidekicks and then deal 2 damage to a target character. And that's how I want to see ally work. Take things that can specifically target sidekicks and see how they interact with some of these characters. The rare Mary Jane that can give overcrush when fielded is another one, because you want to keep refielding her. Maybe knock her out with that Norman Osborn global turn after turn. It doesn't... It's a way of knocking out your own characters to reap the benefits without bringing something as universal as Blue Eyes for your opponent to take advantage of as well.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think there's already cool ways to do it. You talked about Alfred and his status as an ally. We've had good ally cards just on their own. We've had good ally cards that operate as sidekicks, and I think really the sky's the limit there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Randy, number four.
All right, number four, Fabricate.
Love it.
Characters of Fabricate will have two numbers. If you KO X number of characters with a total purchase cost of Y or more, you can purchase the die with Fabricate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw how potent this was on, the Canadian Nationals teams. It's a great way to get a good body character on any of those golems, just give yourself a chance to refield something that has a killer ability.
Yep, once again, refield, knockout and refield without having to worry about giving your opponent that Blue Eyes White Dragon global. Now, obviously, you're not going to get like a given character discount like Blue Eyes would give you or things like that. And this does, where this can go wrong for some people, is that it does put something else in their bag. But, what a cool ability. What a cool ability.
But keep in mind, there is a finite number of times you can use this.
Yes. Yes, the other drawback there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Finite number of times that you can use it. I have seen it jam up people's bags in a way that they probably didn't intend on at times.
Yeah.
But there are ways to use all of them. Redirecting damage so that somebody can't ping their Hulk. Redirecting damage in just so many different ways. It's a cool ability. It allows you those on-demand knockouts. And the absorption that each of them offers, apart from their Fabricate, just for being cards that have Fabricate on them, are pretty cool. And I hope we see more Fabricate in future D&D sets. You might think of Fabricate as just something in the new Magic set Kaladesh, if you are new to the game, but no. D&D Dice Masters had it first. Next up, Truby's going to love us. It is Swarm. Ah, boy, I love Swarm. I've had so much fun with Swarm. Not as much as Truby, but while a die with Swarm is active and you draw another copy of that die from your bag during your clear and draw step, draw and roll an extra die from your bag. You do this for each matching die with Swarm drawn from your bag. For one, like, kobolds, am I right?
Oh, yeah. They wrote the book on Swarm.
Yes, they did. Truby wrote the book on Swarm with an awesome Johnny Swarm team that he took to Worlds in 2015. And that is why he is, in fact, the Kobold King. But it's a great means of ramp. It really changes things. And the cards that had it made an impact. I played variants of that team, too, after Truby sort of introduced it to everybody with the Kobold and the Super Rare Sturge. Just a lot of fun. You have people doing things with the Foot Soldiers and Wong, the Foot Soldiers with Swarm and some other things in common-only drafts. It's just so many ways to have fun with it, I think. I've seen people mess with Swarm in big entrants. We've seen it prove its competitive mettle, and we see people continuing to experiment with it. And that excitement has only grown with Multiple Man coming up in Deadpool. I know there are arguments about the cost and the stats and is it worth it, but nonetheless, it sparked a lot of conversation, which means that people are going to continue to experiment with it, and we're going to continue to see Swarm at a competitive level.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I think, it's a great mechanic to have as a means of ramp. And the fact that we have, multiple characters at multiple costs with multiple energy types, it's really open to a whole plethora of different strategies.
I completely agree. All right, Randy, our number two.
Number two, Overcrush. When attacking, if this character KOs all of its blockers or they are removed for other reasons, it deals any remaining damage to your opponent.
Yeah.
I love Overcrush.
What can you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, Gorilla Grodd is really, really reintroducing Overcrush to... I mean, I don't know if it's going to make noise in the competitive unlimited meta because it is 7 cost, but I know people are winning drafts with him. And what's... One thing that's funny is when... maybe Dave remembers this too. When Age of Ultron came out, and the 2-cost basic action Hulk out that gave something Overcrush, do you remember how many people freaked out about that and said it was going to break the game, and a 2-cost basic action that gave Overcrush, like, that's just unfair? Like, it was...
Wait, who said that?
I just remember, you know, reading stuff online, whether...
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. I thought you said I said that. I was like, wait, I don't remember that.
Oh, no.
But yes, I do remember people say yes. Now that you mention it, yes.
And that one really kind of got thrown by the wayside. But I mean, there's definitely a place for Overcrush. I mean, I just won a local draft, and one of the characters that did it for me was the Purple Worm. Just the common. Mm-hmm. Had Overcrush.
Yes, tell us who you beat in that local draft, Randy.
I beat... the only 2-time national champion in my...
Mr. JT Homash himself.
It was JT Homash. Man, he's going to get mad at me for saying this on the air, but he made a mistake early on in the game. And
a JT misplay, not without unlimited confidence.
I know. I had my human paladin out so he couldn't use globals on anything of mine, and I attacked with the Purple Worm, and he just blocked with a single sidekick, and then went to use the transfer power global to, you know, swap my Purple Worm's, you know, attack power with something else so that nothing went through. And I was like, as soon as he went to do it, he was like, oh, you have the paladin out there, oh, I can't do that. And he just had to eat 5 damage, and he was not a happy camper. But
no, I can't imagine. So JT, you took second, you got some cool stuff, don't worry about it. And I know he's not, but it's fun to talk about.
Yeah,
Overcrush is cool. That Hulk out was fun, man. That was great in Age of Ultron draft, if you could do Ultron and drones.
Yeah.
Or even just drones with Hulk out, and the capture ability was pretty cool. Overcrushing with Wolverine, the best there is. I know you guys devised a team with that. Lauren was running a team with that at a top 8 at an event in West Virginia, my wife, about a year or two ago. Oh boy, it was mid 2015. Yeah. So about a year and a couple months ago. And just a lot of fun ways to use Overcrush that, again, has influenced the competitive way that we play the game in all phases, in draft as well as constructed. All right. Before we get to number one, a couple of honorable mentions. Randy, something that you love that we did not yet talk about.
Yeah, it's Cleave. It's only on 1 card, the common half-orc barbarian. Cleave. Mm. If a die with Cleave attacks and KOs a blocking character die with combat damage, they deal half their attack, rounded down, to another character die your opponent controls as combat damage, only once. That actually sounds really intricate and really circumstantial, but all it means is you can't chump block this guy. Because he'll be able to deal half of his attack to anything I want after I knock out a chump blocker. The reason it didn't make the list is because there's only 1 card with it, and it doesn't have...
Yeah.
It doesn't have enough attack power to really make it worthwhile. The attack stats of that half-orc barbarian are 2, 3, and 4. And since this is half rounded down, you're dealing one or two damage to another character after it's blocked, if it knocked out its, you know, its blocker. Man, that's just...
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
That sucks. But... But if... Sure. But if we had, you know, a six... If we get that up to, like, a six attack, all of a sudden... Mm-hmm. Okay. You're able to do three damage to something after it knocks out its blocker. There's a lot of targets that you could take care of that are a nuisance for, you know, three defense. I mean, we're looking at both Dwarf Wizard and Constantine that are competitive staples. I mean, so all we need is something either with a higher attack power, or one thing I suggested in a conversation is we see, you know, an equipable axe in the D&D set that gives, you know, plus three attack and cleave, and, you know, equip that.
Yeah, that would be pretty.
Equip that gear onto something, and all right, now we're ready to rock and roll. But as it stands right now, with only having one character that can use it, it's not there yet.
Yeah, a little too situational. My honorable mention would have to be Retaliation. I was the only person to put it on my list. I didn't have it all that high. My number one was Continuous, and that alone is what ended up shooting it onto the list, giving it 10 points.
Yeah.
But I like Retaliation a lot. I've had a lot of fun with it, especially the Black Manta, but some other cards too, both in draft and in constructed. I had a Black Manta Retaliation team that just had win conditions all over the place on it, was runner-up in a constructed event. Now, I know how this is going to sound. Yes, the team had Gobby on it. No, that wasn't, like, the only way. No, it wasn't. Yes, the team had Gobby. No, it wasn't a Gobby team, even though a lot of you are going to say, yes, it's a Gobby team because it has Gobby. But just all the different angles you could play with villains. If one avenue got locked down, you had other ways to do it, because you can't have an affiliation blanked if you're relying on a when fielded ability like Gobby. You still got that out there. You can knock it out. You can try again. All sorts of different ways you can mess with Retaliation, and it's so much fun to play with. I like Tribalism a lot, and Retaliation is one of those abilities, like Team Watch, that encourages it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, sorry. You wanted to say something about Retaliation.
I was just going to say that, I mean, I've used it on some teams, and no, I didn't put it on my list, but that's only because I think there are so many things right now that kind of make it not as useful as it once was. Maybe Retaliation will be exciting again. Some more stuff comes out, but right now I think it's definitely lost some of its luster over the past couple sets.
I will say that what I'd like to see is Retaliation to come back, but redefined a little bit differently. Right, the way that Retaliation is defined is when an affiliated character is knocked out, deal one damage to an opponent. But it's already been defined differently by that uncommon Black Manta.
Right.
Since it's one damage for each active villain. So let's see some Retaliation that just triggers on an affiliated knockout, but then does all kinds of other things. When an affiliated character is knocked out, draw a die and put it in your prep area. When an affiliated character is knocked out, move a die from your opponent's used pile to their bag. I don't know. Something like that. Just different kinds of manipulation or other aspects. you have to be careful because maybe an on-demand knockout like Blue Eyes White Dragon could mess with it. But nonetheless, I think it's cool. I think it could be made even cooler, but I like it.
Okay.
That being said, it's time for our number one, and that is Breath Weapon. Breath Weapon is a D&D ability. Boy, you know, I think I want to say first, if you look at this, D&D abilities have really been mentioned a fair amount today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fabricate is D&D. Swarm is D&D. Breath Weapon, I mean, it's not just, but it started there.
Yeah.
Breath Weapon is D&D. Cleave was also D&D, and you like that one.
Yeah, Experience, D&D.
Experience is D&D. How about that? So D&D is rocking it with the keywords here, I would say, especially if you're interested in the competitive aspects of the game. Breath Weapon. When a character dies with Breath Weapon X attacks, you may pay X energy, deal X damage to your opponent and all of their character dice. You may use multiple Breath Weapons in a turn, but only one per character no matter how many copies of that die are attacking. Breath Weapon is so much fun!
Oh my gosh, it is.
When you can say, I'm going to try to win and also have fun, then you know you're doing the right thing. And Breath Weapon is a very fun way to do that. Michael Lee has shown us the way with his his crazy iterations on Dragon teams. And I've seen this in drafts. I've seen this in Popper. I've seen this in Constructed. Just continue to be a factor.
Yeah, I think... I think that the breath weapons that can... I think that with the resurgence we've seen of so many sidekick teams, you know, something as simple as Breath Weapon 1 that can really wipe out an opponent's win condition for a turn or two. That could really see a return to competitive play. Right now dragons are kind of a niche in the competitive meta, but I mean, they're there. They are.
Yes.
I just think that, I mean, they could honestly be more prevalent than they are now if, I guess, people realized how strong they could be. I think they're written off, you know, so often as just, you know, their novelty. Like, Breath Weapon's cool, but dragons are too expensive. Well, they don't have to be. There's some four-cost dragons out there, Breath Weapon 1.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's swung a little bit away from them just because of how much things are geared towards aggro right now. But when mid-range and control were a little more at the center of the meta, it was very easy to piece together. I'm not going to say easy, like simple, so simple, because certainly Michael Lee did a lot of work to get the team to where he wanted it and tune it and continue to use it for some time. But it was very viable in a meta that emphasized some longer games. And with some of the testing events out there, I do believe that we will be getting back to that before too long. At least that remains my hope. All right. So that's a top 10 list for you and a 6-pack this episode. And that is going to bring us to the end. Thank you for listening. We know that you can spend your time in many ways, and we're truly thankful that you spend it with us. If you like what we're doing, please leave a review on iTunes or Google Play or wherever else you get fine podcasts. It does, of course, help us get the word out. Also, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/theattackzone. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Production assistance from RJ Retro. Theme music is courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration is given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool, as well as The Prep Area. Reserve Pool is every Thursday, and The Prep Area is every Tuesday, opposite hours. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Did you mow the lawn today?
No, in fact, I did not. Though I played some Stardew Valley, and my character just cleared out a whole bunch of grass and weeds.
So when the weather sucks and you can't go outside to mow your lawn, you get on to play a game where your character can, in fact, mow the lawn.
In a sense, I guess. It's such a cool game, though. Like, I know how Farming Simulator sounds.
Yeah.
But it's not that. It's like an RPG, and there's way more to it than that. It's like... Well, I haven't played Harvest Moon. I understand a lot of people say it's like that, but better. I can't speak to that. It's like if Minecraft met Terraria and wasn't like open procedurally generated world, and had like NPC interactions and stuff like that. I guess that sort of gets close to it, but not even then. It's really hard to explain, but there's so much more going on. There's story to it. And like the whole idea is that your character in the game, this isn't a spoiler. It's like the intro to the game. It's the premise of the game. Your grandfather deeds you a farm, and you don't know this until you get very sick of your corporate job in a cube farm, which I can relate to. I'm in a cube farm, though my job's all right. But you get sick of your corporate job in a cube farm. You finally break the seal on this letter, and you discover that your grandfather has given you this farm. And, you know, he tells you when he gives you the letter, like, don't open it. You'll know when you need to open this. Don't do it until you realize that you need a change. And so you pack everything up, and you leave for Stardew Valley, and you fix things up. You meet the townsfolk. You go through some story. But you can play it at your own pace. It's relaxing. It's fun. And I just can't say enough good about it. All this is by way of defending myself from virtually mowing the lawn.
You know, you mentioned Harvest Moon. I've actually never played it either. But speaking of an old Super Nintendo title, man, I've been playing the Super Nintendo lately, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything like beyond the typical, well-known Super Nintendo games?
I mean, a couple superheroes things. I've been playing, you know, Spider-Man and Venom and Maximum Carnage and the X-Men.
Such a good game.
The X-Men Mutant Apocalypse. I was rocking through some Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, which that might be the greatest game ever made. Definitely the greatest Zelda game, so anyone who wants to defend Ocarina of Time, I will fight you. Link to the Past is the best Zelda game. No, I actually downloaded a couple of foreign games. Downloaded ROMs? Played on the emulator? That wouldn't be legal. I played some foreign games that were never released in the U.S. One was called The Firemen. Bizarre game. You're a fireman, and this building is burning down, and you have this hose with unlimited supply of water, but you have to put out the fire to, like, navigate the burning building, like, as the flames are coming at you, and it's a very, very cool game, actually. I mean, I've heard it, you know, rated as one of the best games, one of the best Super Nintendo games to not get a U.S. release, and I, you know, gave it a whirl, and yeah, I mean, it's really addicting. It's a fun game.
Something else foreign that I know that you've been playing is a fantastic, I am not one for fighter games, but Gundam Wing.
Endless
is such an
endless duel. Awesome, yep.
Endless duel. Yeah. Oh man. So cool. If you've ever watched that anime, the flavor of it is all there. The graphics, the mechs look great. The abilities are all there. Like, all the personality of each individual mech and what it can do is right there. Mm-hmm. It's so cool. I know you were saying you were playing that, right?
Yeah, yep, I'm playing that. Now, that game was never released in the U.S., but the same engine that they used for that fighting game was reused in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the fighting edition.
Yes, it was.
And that is also an incredibly underrated Super Nintendo game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Power Rangers buff, especially the Thunder Zords that are featured in that game. Those were the best Zords, in my opinion. The Red Dragon Thunder Zord was the best. But that game is very underrated as far as fighting games go and just video games in general. Haven't played it yet, but got the Sailor Moon, one of the many Sailor Moon games made for the Super Nintendo. And I've been waiting for the time to introduce my daughter to that, because she has fallen in love with Sailor Moon. Sailor Venus, particularly, because
right.
Sailor Venus wears orange, and as we all know, Abigail's favorite color is orange.
Yeah, you Cleveland fans have indoctrinated the young.
Dude, my team is in the World Series.
No, dude, that's awesome. I have no problem with the Indians. Lake Erie, no problem with the Cavs, and the Lake Erie Monsters are even fine.
Yeah.
But actually the Browns, I just feel pity.
Yeah.
At this point. I actually want the Browns to be better, so that's a more interesting rivalry sometime. Maybe.
The Browns are just, they're so just insignificant. Insignificant right now in the grand scheme of Cleveland sports. I mean, the Cavs are getting ready to raise a championship banner. The Indians are in, they're hosting the World Series. They have home field advantage through the World Series, which I hope we play the Cubs because I just wanted to defeat the Cubs in the World Series. I just want to dash their hopes.
If you play, you have to beat them if it's the Cubs. I cannot stand the Cubs. And I'm sorry, Chicago. I know there are some Chicago people out there who we've met and who play this and who listen. I'm sorry, guys. I don't like the Cubs.
Well, here's the thing. When the Red Sox won the World Series a few years ago, you know, they came back and beat the Yankees in the ALCS, and they went on to win the World Series, and they beat the Curse of the Bambino, and that's great, and I was rooting for them, and it was cool to see them finally win one. And then all these bandwagon Red Sox fans came out of the woodwork, and it was Red Sox Nation all of a sudden, and everyone loves the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Boston would come to town, there were, you know, more Red Sox fans going to Indians games than there were Indians fans. And I just know it's going to be 10 times worse if the Cubs ever win a World Series.
And you guys, I mean, I hope you're comfortable. Like, you guys don't have a lot of championship experience. Not that the Cubs do.
Yeah.
But you guys, I hope you're comfortable with being the ones who have to prevent that. Like, it's possible that you're going to be in the position to stop that madness from descending upon the baseball world.
I mean, I'm not going to be on the field, but I feel like that burden is on my shoulders. So I will...
I mean, yeah, it can, but it can work. Like, look, the sixth man or 12th man or whatever, the 10th man thing, yes, it's overblown. That said, watch that Pirates playoff game a couple of years ago when we played Cincinnati, and it was like a hockey atmosphere, and all of the fans, definitely loud, are chanting the pitcher's name, Cueto. Cueto. He dropped the ball and it rolled away from the mound. Next pitch, home run.
Wow.
I mean, it was amazing. If you haven't seen that, you got to watch a YouTube video. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Coolest sports moment. One of the coolest sports moments I've seen.